Is it Lieutenant or Lieutenant?
Which woman is every gun named after?
And why has no one ever actually run the gauntlet?
Join us from battle cry to parting shot on this warlike episode of Words Unraveled.
Welcome to another Words Unraveled. I'm Rob Watts from the YouTube channel Rob Words.
And I'm Jess Safaris, author of the etymology books Once Upon a Word and Words from Hell. And today we are having a war of words. We're getting bellicose and bombastic, aren't we, Rob?
Yes, we are. Eyes front, quick march into this episode all about military terms.
Yes, indeed. And I'm no warrior myself. I'm just a lover and just a learner. But I do love some of the origins behind these terms. They're really interesting, and it's a great way to like look back through our history across cultures.
It's also going to become very apparent that I am not a military man either. I don't know about a lot of the items and the people that we're going to be talking about, but I do know a fair bit about where the words come from. And that's what we're going to focus on here. We're going to keep it light, not going too deep into the old modern warfare, but more of the historical stuff, because that's where the juicy word origins come in.
And they're pretty surprising too. Like some of these are the words that we now associate with historical warfare. Didn't begin that way. So we'll see how it goes.
So where do we start with this, Jess?
I think we should start with the word war itself.
It's unusual in that it's a word that we get from French, but specifically a word that we get from the Normans, who are speaking a kind of French that is heavily Germanic inflected, because the Normans are essentially Vikings, right? They are the Northmen, the Norsemen, who have landed in northern France and set up shop there. And the dialect that they've taken on while they're there is also a little bit affected by the Franks who'd been living in the area as well. So it has characteristics about it that are distinctly Germanic, which is why our word war comes from French, even though the French word for war is guerre. And that's because one of the characteristics of Norman French is that you have a lot of things that in modern French are g words. They're actually w words. It's a very Germanic sound, this w sound. For example, it's why we've got wardens and guardians. We've taken the same word from the modern style French, which is actually a dialect from Paris, and the Norman French, the same warranty, guarantee. I go on about this on my channel quite a lot because I actually think it's one of the sort of more fascinating things about the French contribution to the English language.
It is. And, you know, you might suspect that this, the root of this word means something like to fight or to do battle, but I think it's actually far truer to the nature of war than either of those senses. The Proto-Indo-European root of war means to confuse or to mix up, which sounds more accurate, right?
Yeah, it really bears out the chaos that war always is.
The original sense of the Old English versions of this word, like wira, were thought to mean to bring into confusion.
I think Delaware is named after someone whose surname is De La Wera.
Ooh.
Which is the Norman word for war. It's of the war.
I'm going to offend someone from Delaware with this, but that is the state that I forget exists the most, even though I live relatively close to it.
Okay, if I was wrong about my fact, at least what you've just said is what people are going to concentrate on.
Yeah, there we go. They can go after me instead. And I've been there too. So like, I don't know. One of the things here too is it's possible that like some languages favor the Germanic rooted terms for war because the Latin word for war, bellum, literally struggle or strife, too closely resembles words for beauty, like bella in Romance languages.
Right, yeah, casus belli, the reasons for war, the justifications for war. Sounds lovely, doesn't it? It's like the justifications for your beauty.
But we do use bellum, the Latin word for other purposes, like the word bellicose and belligerent, both describing people prone to conflict, and antebellum, literally pre-war or before the war, often referring to the period before the American Civil War in the South. And then the word rebel, for example.
Belligerent. I hadn't thought of that one. That creates such an image in my head now.
Battle and combat are from a different source too, meaning to beat or to fight. And that L-E ending on battle is frequentive, so you're repeatedly beating or fighting, which is fun.
So you know the Battle of Hastings. Do you know what the area where that battle was fought is now called?
No, tell me.
Battle.
There we go. That'll do.
Yep. You know when you found it.
I like the consistency between the words like combat, meaning to fight together or fighting together, and conflict, which shares a root with words like inflict and afflict, of course, meaning to strike. So conflict is striking against and striking together.
Together.
Germanic words for war also appear in people's names, right?
They do? Tell me about it.
like in the word Hedwig. Basically means fighting a battle. And then Hild, as in Brunhilde, literally armed for battle, is a cool one.
Right. And that reminds me of the etymology of gun.
Oh, yes, absolutely. This is one of my favorites. Tell us about it.
Well, gun is thought to come from the name Gunnhilde, which is a Scandinavian name, isn't it? It's a Viking-style name.
Specifically, like, one specific weapon. It's wild. It traces back to the Old Norse word gunner or battle, but the relationship between those two words took this detour via the shortening of a woman's name, which is Gunilda, which short for Gunilda, which is formed of the elements, two elements meaning war or battle. And one of the first documented connections between the female name and the name of a weapon is in a 1330 munitions inventory of Windsor Castle, which refers to a specific, particularly large ballista, una magna ballista, literally in this munitions inventory, named Domina Gunilda, or Lady Gunilda, or like Mistress Gunilda. And from there, Gunilde became the common Middle English term for a cannon, followed by the shortening of Gunna in the 14th century. And then as weapons technology evolved, it went from cannons to handheld firearms.
And weapons are women, generally, right?
Which is hilarious, given how phallically they are often treated.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Well, and I mean, I guess like women, most men like the idea of having one.
Right, exactly. The word weapon in particular was also in Old English a euphemism for a penis. So we've got that going for us.
Yeah, of course it was. Of course it was.
To the surprise of no one.
So I've got quite a lot, Jess, about military titles.
Let's do that.
Because a while back, I did a video where I claimed to be re-ranking the army. So what I did was I looked at the etymologies of all of the different ranks and then worked out where they actually should be, the order in which they should actually be, because they are completely wrong.
Yeah, and they're all like not related, like some of them aren't related to war entirely, and some of them are from like the names of servants. So yeah, let's get into it.
Yeah, well, so let's start with the lowliest one, which is also historically one of the highest, like in the British Army, the highest. People will remember Field Marshal Haig, for example, in the First World War. Field Marshal has arguably the biggest disparity between its etymology and its grandeur, because Marshal comes from a sort of Germano-Franco word. So we get it from French, but again, it's sort of Germanic inspired for horse servant.
Yep.
It's essentially the person who tends to the horses. And that places it, in my mind, below sergeant, which is a word that is equivalent to servant. It's not, it means servant. The word sergeant and the word servant, they're variations on the same word. And I'm putting horse servant below servant. I don't know why. It just feels like if your master is a horse, that is one step lower than your master being another human.
I feel that. And then knight or Knecht is also a word for a servant or a boy originally, right?
Yeah. In German, it still is. It's Knecht, which is a kind of servant. If you actually want to talk about a knight, you would say a Ritter, which people might know from the famous chocolates, Ritter Sport.
Amazing. This is not an advertisement.
I could never afford Ritter Sport. It's funny. One of those things you always find in airports over here.
Yeah, I think that's the only Ritter time Sport. I've ever had them. Yeah. But yeah, in Old English, the most common word for a young boy was Knechtkind or knight child.
Really? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. So you've got a sergeant major. That's a little bit confusing because major has a fairly, I suppose, obvious etymology. I
mean, right. You would think so.
It means big. But then we've got a few others that just mean like head, like captain. We've talked about captain comes up a lot because we're always talking about how caput has all of these different derivatives in the English language from chapter. I mean, these are the obvious ones. Chapter, mm-hmm. Captain.
Capital, decapitate.
Capital, of course, decapitate, indeed. And then corporal is arguably also from the same root, although there is a little bit of controversy over that one. It might also, because it seems more obviously that it would mean body than head, right? Corporal punishment is punishment of the body. But it's actually thought to come from a French caporal, which would be derived from the Latin for head instead. So you've got to decide whether you want your captain or your corporal up higher in the rankings. Then we've got lieutenant.
Wait, now this is, why did you say it like that?
Exactly. Because how should I have said it?
Lieutenant, right?
I certainly should. Yeah. Uh-huh. And you know it's lieutenant everywhere except the United States, right?
Yeah, well, there's no F in it. This is an herb situation, but the other way around.
You know, we could do an entire episode just on whether it is lieutenant or lieutenant, right? And the word, look at it, it's obviously lieutenant or lieutenant, right? It's from the French lieutenant, which means exactly placeholder. So why on earth are the British, and I think the Canadians as well, might need to check that one, the Australians, why are they saying lieutenant? We don't really know, but there are some really interesting theories about it. And it goes back an awful long way. I mean, you can see in Middle English, there are spellings like lieutenant, lieutenant, lieutenant. And the F is there. So why is it? Well, one of the theories is, and we've talked about in how in the past, U and V were the same letter. They would be written the same. So that would mean people misreading lieu as leave, because the U was written with a V instead, which is reasonable, but it doesn't get you to lef, does it? So how do we get there? Well, one theory that I really like is, right, French, they still do this in French. Have you ever noticed a French person say oui, but when they do it, they end it with this sort of puff of air. They say oui, like that. You can also do that at the end of lieu.
Oh, interesting. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like this theory.
So you put that sound into the mouths of English speakers or Anglo-Norman speakers, and maybe that's how you get to lieutenant.
I kind of like that, because the OED doesn't like the V to F explanation.
Yeah.
And it also...
It's a bit too clean and a bit too stupid. I mean, that would be happening all over our language, wouldn't it? We'd be swapping U's and V's if that was the kind of thing that was going on.
Yeah, that one doesn't have a lot of like strong evidence. And it would require the people who are pronouncing this to like be able to spell it, which go back far enough, and there are probably a lot of people who couldn't.
Yeah, I mean, you'd never see it written down, probably.
Right.
But so lieutenant does seem to have like right on its side. It's not perfect, but it's a bit closer. But at the same time, lieutenant sounds like some sort of toilet warden.
That never would have occurred to me in a million years. That's hilarious.
Or someone who lives in a toilet, even. Yeah,
maybe we're just trying to avoid that.
A toilet dweller. Yeah, that's why we're not saying it.
And just for the record, I know that like most people who watch this podcast will not think this, but it has nothing to do with the fact that the lieutenant stands to the left of anyone.
Oh, is that a thing?
I've seen that explanation before. Not by people who knew what they were talking about, but that has also been floated as a theory. So what other ranks do you have?
Well, let's just sweep up general, for example. So general is
the
called...
The most generic form of leader.
Yeah, a general officer is just sort of generally in charge. Although the term is also applied to lieutenant generals and major generals as well. And in that instance, you can see the French influence in the titles, because that is putting the adjective after the noun. So it's actually a little bit weird to call them a general rather than the lieutenant or major, you know, to focus on the descriptor rather than the actual noun. And then a private, or why are they called privates? It's because people have private armies to start with. You know, the fighters were hired for a private cause, basically.
That's why privateers are called that, right?
Yeah. Exactly, guns for hire.
That comes into soldier too, right? Because it's from the Latin solidus, meaning a word for a gold coin. So if you're a soldier, you're someone who works, whose job for money is to be a soldier.
That's fantastic. I didn't know that one.
It all comes down to money, sort of like the salary too, right?
I knew we'd get onto salary if we went down that route. Yeah.
Originally a soldier's pension for the purchase of salt. Meanwhile, mercenary, that also comes down to like market and commerce. It's related to the words market, commerce.
Or like mercantile.
Meaning wares or merchandise. And although a mercenary today is most often associated with soldiers for hire from the 14th to the 17th centuries, it referred to anyone who worked for hire, and especially someone solely motivated by profit. It could also be related to the name of the god Mercury, who was a god of messengers and travelers, but also represented merchants and sellers, and is thought to have been borrowed from the name of an Etruscan god of exchange. The least expected relative here, though, is mercy, which implies specifically heavenly rewards earned by good, devoted servants of God.
Oh, right. You have to earn your mercy.
Yeah. Oof.
I feel like I shouldn't allow the opportunity to pass by. You mentioned merchandise to show you my latest t-shirt.
Ooh, let's see. Oh, excellent. we've discussed, I think we landed on the plural of that word as grolices on our previous podcast episodes. Of course, right. That's the word for the series of characters and other markings that can replace a swear word in a comic or in text.
For the benefit of the tape, I'm showing my t-shirt, which says what the various symbols is a grolix. Grolix being those various symbols as used in a comic. And it's a design by our very own Jess Safaris, available in the Words Unraveled shop. Links in the description to this podcast and, of course, on YouTube.
Excellent. Get yourself one. Now, as far as this isn't exactly a rank or, you know, it's more of a division, but I also love how kind of insulting the word infantry is.
So is it what it sounds like?
It is related to the word infant, like children. The logic is like young, inexperienced troops who were the first one shoved onto the battlefield. Infants in pens also means not speaking. And that describes infants like you. They cannot speak, therefore they are called infants.
That's why they're called infants.
Cavalry, though, is from, of course, a word for a horse. It's from the Latin caballus, meaning workhorse or pack horse. So the cavalry is, of course, mounted.
And chivalry comes from the same root.
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
One that I missed off was colonel.
Oh, yeah. This is a good one.
Because we talked about weird pronunciations and spellings. The pronunciation of colonel comes from the French, colonel, which you can see written down, and then you sort of see how over a few centuries it gets
dyslexia'd its way into
lazy
things.
English speakers just sort of reduced to colonel from coronel. But the spelling with that ridiculous L comes from the Italian word colonello, which basically there was just a period where military historians were obsessed with Italian warfare methods. And so they thought, okay, well, we're going to take that word, their word, but we'll just keep our own pronunciation of the French word. And it really is nonsensical that we pronounce colonel the way we do, or rather that we spell it the way we do.
Is the interest in Italian warfare or in like Roman warfare?
It's Italian warfare.
Okay, yeah,
it's more recent than that. And we have a lot of terms from Italian warfare, like alarm, for example, is an Italian cry of to arms.
All at arms.
To arms.
All to arms.
And also alert as well, which is from, I think it's alerta, which means essentially to height. It's a call to go to the watchtower.
So not all, it's to, I see. Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. It's a preposition rather than the word all, even though it looks a lot like it.
I know this is like an old meme, by the way, but is like Rome your Roman Empire? Like, do you know what I mean by that?
How often do I think about it?
Right. I hated this question when it came out because I was like, well, I think about etymology every day. And so if I think about a Latin root word, then you might say that I think about the Roman Empire every day, but I don't think about the Roman Empire every day.
I think we probably think about the Roman Empire more than most, Jess.
Yeah, probably. Speaking of which, a few actual Roman military terms. We've got like centurion, commander of 100, a legionnaire. A legion is a body of troops. I think it's like 5,000 to 6,000 soldiers. So you're one of many. We are legion.
Linking in with legion, colonel, coronel, and colonello. They all mean column because you're the head of a column of soldiers.
While we're on Rome, I do think it would be relevant to discuss briefly the word decimate, because pedants tend to say that most people use the term decimate wrong. It doesn't mean to totally destroy, but to literally to destroy or to reduce by 1/10.
Yeah.
Because of a certain practice.
Yeah. Killing off every 10th man in a sort of punishment.
That wasn't like common practice throughout the entirety of the Roman Empire. That was like a couple of really nasty leaders making people do that.
We should humor this idea, though, that that's how we should be using decimate, because a lot of people do say that, and they're not wrong to say that that is what its etymology indicates, but it's been used to mean to destroy utterly for a very, very long time. And I'm not even sure it was ever only used in English. You know, if there was ever a time where that word was in English and it only meant to reduce by a tenth, I think it's almost always meant to, you know, something more dramatic than that.
You and I are descriptivists more than proscriptivists, right? Or prescriptivists, just because it's an exercise in futility once a word becomes used in a particular way to try and drag it back to its literal meaning.
Plus, if you decide that etymology is how you're going to decide what a word means, then where does it stop? Because the words you're using all day, every day, that are not directly linked to what they originally meant. And we talked about words like fabulous. You know, if people say something is fabulous, that does not mean that it has to have come from a fable.
Exactly.
Anymore. For example, it's just, it's a fool's errand.
Let's see, where should we go from here?
Well, I've been looking at words and phrases that we have from the military and from war context that can be a little bit surprising, I think. A really good one, really juicy one, that I had no idea about before, is the word slogan.
Yes.
So slogan originally comes from a Gaelic war cry.
Uh-huh.
Used by the Scottish Highlanders, like very, very, very long time ago. I'm going to have a go at pronouncing it. It's sluagem. It comes from a word meaning slua, which is a sort of demon, really. But also it had this meaning of sort of a horde, because this demon would sort of be the patron demon of the horde. And yeah, and the germ means shout, but it means war cry. Literally, slogan means war cry. And there were other renderings of it into English as funny things like slug horn,
yeah,
which I like. So we could have ended up calling slogan slug horns, but we didn't. Slogan caught on.
I feel like Slughorn would be a fun brand name as a result of that.
There should be a marketing company called Slughorn.
Oh, yeah. I bet there already is. There are so many marketing orgs out there. The second element of that word is also related to the word garrulous, meaning like talkative or chattering. But I always feel like implies someone who is like large and bombastic speaking frequently.
That's got a Gaelic origin.
It came to English from Latin, but is ultimately from the same root.
Yeah. Because of course, the Gaelic languages are also Indo-European languages. So you can trace that back, like you can trace English back.
Right. It has cognates in like Greek, but also like Welsh and Old Irish too.
Here's one. You know, when people talk about run the gauntlet, you know that we're getting it wrong.
No.
It shouldn't be run the gauntlet at all.
A gauntlet is a like glove, right?
Yeah, which doesn't make any sense, does it? Because you're right. Not running a glove. You're running through sort of a corridor, basically, where, you know, you're being beaten from both sides. The original term, and this really was the phrase, was to run the gantlope.
Oh.
Yeah.
Was it just misunderstood? Is that like...
So it's because we've consistently conflated run the gauntlet with throw down the gauntlet.
Ah, right? So literally this is one of those metaphors. Like, we'll burn that bridge when we come to it.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
But so, it's become generic. That's amazing.
Because as you rightly say, a gauntlet is from a French term for a small glove. A modern French word for a glove is a gant, and a small one would be a gauntlet. And, you know, to challenge someone to a duel, one of the ways you could do that was to throw your glove on the floor, throw your gauntlet on the floor. So to throw down the gauntlet was to challenge someone to a duel. But to run the gauntlet or to run the gantlope. Gantlope comes from, I think it's from Swedish or something like that. But people who speak other Germanic languages might recognize that lope bit as being related to words like Lauf in German, which means to walk or a passageway. So yeah, the Gantlope is a corridor. And their original Gantlope was a military punishment. This is according to the OED, in which the culprit had to run stripped to the waist between two rows of men who struck at him with a stick or a knotted cord.
Ouch. That sounds bad.
No, well, don't misbehave. Don't misbehave in the army. Otherwise, you'll either get decimated or forced to run the Gantlope.
Since we mentioned gauntlets real quick, basically every kind of armor is named after wherever you put it. Like greaves are from the old French clève, meaning shin or leg armor. Pauldrons or spalders are from épaule, meaning shoulder. Vambrace is avant-bras, meaning forearm. Gorget is the word for your throat, which you also see in words like gorgeous, which describes someone with a long and slender and shapely neck originally. And then like a hauberk is a neck protector too, but is from Old Frankish.
You could be making all these words up. I didn't know really? A single one of them.
I read a lot of fantasy, like high fantasy. So read about sabatons. That's also from the sabat, like sabotage, meaning shoe or clog. We talked about sabotage being a word, like literally like implying throwing shoes in the machine.
Well, we were talking about military punishments. Actually, there's another phrase that potentially comes from a military punishment, which is to face the music. There seems like there's an obvious link there to, playhouses.
Is it more like facing the drummers and fifes and whatnot on the battlefield?
It's not facing them on the battlefield. It's facing them in essentially a military trial as the charges are read out. Supposedly, the accused soldier was made to face the drum squad as the charges were read out.
Oof. Hmm. That's dark.
But I mean, that's one of the theories, but it's quite a good one.
Another term we have from the military. I mean, I always like the acronyms like FUBAR and SNAFU. Those tend to creep outside of the military.
I went down a rabbit hole on YouTube the other day watching black and white American military films from World War II. My goodness, have I entered my midlife crisis. But I ended up watching a cartoon, and I think it was like Mel Blanc was voicing it, as in Bugs Bunny and such, about a guy called Private Snafu.
I just learned a secret. It's a honey, it's a pip, but the enemy is listening, so I'll never let it slip.
I do recall having seen this like years ago, just crawling around the internet.
Private Snafu, they made cartoons about this useless, actually he's not useless necessarily, but he is kind of the lowest common denominator of a GI or whatever, of an American soldier, Private Snafu. And they make cartoons to kind of teach soldiers how to behave. Like the one I was watching, Private Snafu had spent a bit too long in a French brothel and then a bit too long in a French gambling house, etc. It's like how not to behave. But Snafu is an acronym.
Yes, it's a situation normal all f***ed up.
Yes, it is. I was going to say effed up, but yep.
Cool.
I guess we got into the habit with our swearing episode and now it's okay.
I mean, how many of these episodes haven't at least dropped one little naughty word?
I'm pretty sure I haven't dropped them, but yeah, you definitely have.
Oops.
And then FUBAR is another one, right?
Right. Up beyond all recognition.
Yeah.
Or reason, depends on who you ask.
What I like about these, I think these are both from the American military, but I like the sort of witheringness of them both. The skepticism that is inherent in these two phrases, effed up beyond all recognition and situation normal, all effed up.
Phrases like hurry up and wait also like appeared in like American military slang too, because, you rush troops into position and then have them stand around for hours and do nothing or other locations. In other areas beyond the military, we use terms like scorched earth and no man's land, and those are pretty obvious. And grunt, of course.
Grunt.
Mm-hmm. We'll use that as like a low-level laborer, but that was an infantryman during the Vietnam War.
Is it a piggy reference?
Yep, basically. Like the grunting of, more like the grunting of exertion.
Oh, okay. Not
yeah, but less piggy. But okay. You are running through the mud, so guess it depends on how mean your sergeant is.
Yeah.
speaking of hurry up and wait, the term siege literally means like sitting. Like you're sitting on someone figuratively or on a location because, you know, you camp outside the walls until everyone's either starved, surrendered, or gotten really annoyed.
Yeah, siège is French for seat.
I also really like the word ambush for how like literal it is. It is to ambush oneself, to hide really? In a bush and jump out at someone.
Oh, I like that one too.
Barricade also, like, it's definitely giving Les Miserables because it means made of barrels. Like it's to create a blockade originally made of like rocks and barrels and dirt and whatever else you had.
And an old word for a barricade was a cumulus, by the way, a Latin word for it.
Like an accumulation, but I like that it's giving cloud.
Yeah, but it means a mound, right? And cumulus clouds look like a big mound.
I like that.
It's also related to words like encumbrance as well. Yeah, a blockage.
As far as weapons go, the word bomb is surprisingly old. It arose in English in the 1580s, but its origins are Greek and it's onomatopoetic. It means boom. Basically.
Hot take here. Like explosions don't sound like boom, right? They just don't. They don't sound like boom.
Well, okay. So by the way, did you know, I think we may have discussed this before, but the word explode means to clap outward. And I think that's more accurate.
You mean like applaud?
It's related to the outwards. Word applause. Yes.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's really good. Awesome. So implode is to clap.
Clap inward.
Excellent.
And that one's, that's a much more recent word. Like implosion is far more recent than explosion.
Yeah, it's probably not a back formation, but it probably only exists because explosion exists, I thought.
But as far as bomb goes, the word first referred to mortar shells, and the earliest and most famous use of mortars is thought to be in the 1453 Siege of Constantinople.
We should mention tanks, actually, as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that one's fun.
Yeah, why are they called tanks? So the tanks were developed by the British during the First World War.
And it's code.
Yeah, they refer to them as tanks, as code. Yeah, what's the project you're working on? Oh, it's just what are these massive things that you're shipping to the front? Oh, they're just water tanks.
Yeah, in 1915, the British Committee of Imperial Defense recommended the proposed Caterpillar Machine Gun Destroyer, which is what it was called. Whew. It's a mouthful, to be called the Tank Supply Committee. They were also called Cisterns and Reservoirs at some point.
But the name stuck because it just kind of works, doesn't it?
Big blocky piece of steel, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cannon is from, originally from a word for like a reed, because it's like a little tube. I mean, it's a very big tube, but yeah. But that's what it means. It's from the Latin canna, meaning reed or tube.
Is that related to cane then?
I expect it is, but let's double check. Yes, indeed, it is related.
I love this podcast.
Right? Isn't it fun? We learn something every day. Did you know that the bazooka is named after a comedy routine?
No, I didn't know that.
The original bazooka was used by Bob Burns in the 1930s, and it was a comically large trombone-like junkyard musical instrument. And the military looked at this goofy, unwieldy musical instrument and said that it'd be a great name for an anti-tank rocket launcher.
You can't say these people don't have a good sense of humor. I mean, this is morbid sense of humor. It's obviously very important to people dealing with death day in, day out to make jokes at every possible opportunity.
I have to find the dark comedy in it. I mean, one of my favorite books of all time is Catch 22, which is like the epitome of like dark military humor. But just to complete the thought, bazooka is based on the word bazoo, which is an older word starting like dating back to the 1800s for like mouth or boastful talk.
Oh, right. Okay. So it's kind of a big mouthy gun.
Do you know the literal meaning of the word torpedo?
I feel like I should know this one. Okay, torpedo.
You know a related word, torpor?
Is it Spanish?
It's from Latin.
I do not know what it means.
It is a word for an electric stingray.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. So the electric rays are this group of rays, little flatfish with enlarged pectoral fins, but they are known for being able to produce an electric discharge up to like 220 volts, depending on the species. They were named because they were able to numb their prey. And that's what the Latin word means, to be numb or paralyzed. So the sense of an explosive device used to blow up enemy ships is from 1776, surprisingly, and was first a word for a floating mine because it could cripple a ship, and then later was extended to these like self-propelled underwater explosives.
Right, and the numbing, that's how we get to torpor.
Yeah, isn't that wild?
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And then another fun one that is equally unrelated to the meaning of today's weapon is a grenade, which I think we've talked about before. You know that one, I think.
Grenades and pomegranates,
right,
are indeed related.
Throwing pomegranates at people. From the Latin granatum, meaning seeded, and then a pomum granatum is a seedy apple.
Yeah, and you look at the early grenades and they do look like pomegranates.
And then many of our other like words for weapons, like dagger and bow and sword, are quite literal. A bow is something curved quite literally, and then dagger is a stabber quite literally.
Yeah, it's something you dag someone with.
Exactly. Dag that person. Dag nabbit. Oh, wait. That kind of makes more sense than I thought it would.
Yeah. I think you've got lucky there.
We should at the very least briefly address the fact that sword means like something that cuts or hurts, and was also sometimes a euphemism for a penis.
Oh, yeah. Of course it was.
As it happens.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Indeed. And a vagina was the sheath that you put it in.
Of course.
I said that, by the way, if no one knows that we've talked about that before. That's not just my interpretation of what a vagina is. I'm blushing.
Right.
I've lost my fan.
All right, now that this has gone...
Okay, I've got two more things that I think it might be nice to end on.
Excellent.
The first one is deadline. Did you know that that had military origins?
I mean, I can imagine that it would, but I don't know this one.
Yeah, because we're talking about death, and you know, death tends to come to people involved in military activities a bit more than it does the average person. And the term deadline is coined at a specific Confederate prison during the American Civil War, a prison called Andersonville Prison. And at the prison, beyond the boundary gate, there was another line drawn around the perimeter. And anyone who crossed that line could presume that they would be shot dead by the guards of the prison. And that's why it was called the deadline. And you see how you get from that to this idea of a boundary that you cannot cross or that you shouldn't cross. We talk about it figuratively now, and it's come an awful long way from the idea of being shot for escaping a prison to the idea of, you know, having a deadline for your homework
that, yeah, that's very dark.
You might miss. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's where that comes from. So yeah, that is a dark one.
It sounds dark today that we call a death or injury in war a casualty, right? Really, there's nothing casual about it. But the meaning of casual as we know it today, that is like informal, didn't arise until the late 19th century. That's very recent. And prior to that, casual referred to something that happened by chance, causative almost. And that sense carried over into the vocabulary of war and other situations perilous to life through the idea of misfortune, people killed incidentally or as a random byproduct of battle and disaster.
The thing about casualty is it doesn't specify whether someone has died or just been very injured. And I would actually like someone to let us know in the comments is why in military reporting they talk a lot about the number of people killed and injured, right? And they group and they give a big number for those two things, whereas it seems to me that it would make more sense to give a number for the people who've been killed and the number for the people who've been injured. Is there a procedural reason why those things get grouped together as just kind of the same idea? I guess it's maybe because whether you're dead or really injured, you can't do any more fighting, and that's why it's done like that. But I'd be interested for some insight.
Are you considered a casualty if you have like a scratch, or are you a casualty if you have a more serious injury?
And do you know what the British name for the emergency room, what you call the emergency room at the hospital, is? We call it casualty.
Oh, I think I have seen that sign for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, more commonly we call it accident and emergency now, but for a long time it was called casualty. There was a very, very popular TV show. I think it used to be on, it was a drama, but I think it might have been on a Saturday night called Casualty, that was set in an accident and emergency.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was British ER, basically. Okay, I have one final parting shot for you, and that is the origin of parting shot.
All right.
Because do you know what parting shot is? It's one of our favorite things. It is a folk etymology.
Oh, is it?
It is indeed.
I don't know this one either.
Parting shot makes sense. It's the idea of, you know, you're on your way out and you just turn and you give one last shot, right? And that's why...
Feels very cowboy.
It makes so much sense. And that's why it has been adopted as the phrase. But it was originally a Parthian shot.
Oh, what?
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
I'll allow the OED to explain what a Parthian shot is, but... It says that Parthian horsemen were accustomed to battle their enemies with their rapid maneuvers and to discharge missiles backward while fleeing or pretending to flee.
Huh.
So you still have that idea of being on your way out and firing, or at least pretending to be on your way out and firing. And that is a Parthian shot, not a parting shot.
I would never have guessed that. That's very cool.
I'm glad you liked it.
And with that parting shot, we will peace out of this conversation. And this is the last episode in our, we've been recording 10 episodes at a time. This is the 10th episode in this series or season, depending on which side of the pond you're on. We'll be back in just a few weeks. We'll take a break, record some more episodes, and be back with you with some more fun word origins on Words Unraveled.
Yes, don't go anywhere. Get subscribed if you're not already subscribed, and you'll know when we're back. But we promise it won't be long, because we'll miss you otherwise. Catch you next time on another Words Unraveled.
Bye-bye.